Hello and welcome to the Matt and Shaheen podcast. We're here with episode 4. Hope everybody had a good Christmas and New Year. Matt, how was your break?
Too short, too much food, too much drink, but man, it was good. How was yours, man?
Same. Lots of turkey sandwiches after Christmas. We got some nice sourdough bread and like put the turkey on it the next day with the leftover like cranberry sauce.
Love that.
It was good stuff. New Year's Eve was good. Yeah, we got a night out in London. New Year's Day was just like catching up with like movies and stuff.
It's nice, man. It's such a good time for friends and family. It's probably my favorite time of the year, I think.
Yeah. And it's good at zero. We get an extended break. So
can't complain, right?
Yeah, it was good. Thank you, everybody, for the feedback on the Gary Turner episode. That was just really, really good. That everybody really appreciated that, you know, Gary took his time out to give his vision for 2019 and beyond for zero. That was really, really good. Probably our best episode yet.
100%. Totally agree. I mean, anyone listened to it, you know, it was super insightful. There's so many nuggets in there, not just in the accounting industry, but just tech in general. That just blew my mind.
Yeah.
As I'm sure it did yours as well. So yeah, absolutely loved it.
For sure. And hopefully this podcast is just going to go from strength to strength, and we have so much cool content to kind of bring you this year from what we've got planned in the next few episodes, especially leading into the big white elephant MTD.
Oh, the joys, but I can't freaking wait. It's going to be an exciting ride.
It's going to be brilliant. Today we're going to talk about not necessarily compliance being dead, but compliance being the baseline service that accountants provide and what they can look to build on top of that. So once you've got the systems in place to kind of deliver compliance to your clients at a good, you know, profitable margin as well for your practice, it's all about thinking about what next. And that's not just being compliant with MTD in terms of getting your clients onto a cloud software, but what kind of advice and what kind of service can you really deliver to your clients on top of that to build a really, really great sticky relationship with the clients that you serve. It's going to be a good one today.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah. We've got Matt Flanagan from Bluehub. They are app implementers for both practices and businesses with a focus, I think, on inventory. Isn't that right?
Inventory and stock management, though.
Yeah. And I guess we shouldn't waste any time. So let's just dive right in. Here's Matt from Bluehub.
Cool. So we're here with Matt Flanagan from Bluehub. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. So I guess to kind of kick things off, how about you give yourself a kind of brief intro into Matt and a bit about Bluehub and what you guys do?
Yep. So my name is Matt Flanagan. I'm MD at Bluehub. We are a cloud integrator in and around the Xero ecosystem, working primarily really with wholesalers and people who manage stock. Online product sellers who are looking to link in with Xero. So the stock management system through into Xero, that's primarily what Bluehub do. And me myself, I'm a qualified project manager, not particularly technical, but I've also been helping firms with their adoption of cloud and their transition into the new services and new ways of working that the likes of Xero are going to be offering them.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I think you're in a really interesting space right now because the term app advisory is thrown around like quite a lot. But I think what you guys do is actually put that into a package and execute it, which is really, really interesting, which is kind of why we thought, you know, you'd be a good fit for the Matt and Shaheen podcast, because a lot of what we do is around giving packaged information as much as we can and advice and kind of opinion on the industry to accountants and bookkeepers, just to get a sense of who you actually work with. So what's the profile kind of like of the clients you work with? Is it more of like an outbound approach, or do you find that you're actually getting a lot of inbound, and who are the clients you're working with?
So we get a lot of inbound. On the inventory side, we get a lot of inbound. We've got quite a lot of content out there. We do our own sort of webinars, etc., which are mostly on our YouTube channel. So there's a lot of information we give out, quite educational in our sales process. So we give a lot of people, get a lot of value just from attending the free sessions that we do. But we do, from that, get quite a lot of inbound, where it might be either an accountant who has a client, or it can, more so in the last 6 months, it can actually be people who are businesses already on Xero, who are coming direct to us saying, I need some help with some of the apps. Could you please come in and get involved with us? So yeah, it's really been a hot, early days, probably 3-4 years ago, it was very much accountant led our sort of our efforts in terms of bringing in sales. But the last year we've seen a real shift in that, where we've actually got clients coming direct to us, whether their accountant knows or not, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And what do you find of these clients? What do they have, like, common aspirations? Do they come to you with a certain kind of idea where they want their business to be in, you know, X amount of years' time? What are their common goals?
Yeah, common goals are, there's normally, it's really interesting, two areas. It's normally they're on some sort of growth. So firstly, it'll be a growth. We're looking to do something. So for example, we had an inventory client who came to us who wants to go to SAP in 2025. And they're looking for an interim position because they've got this growth aspiration to be that big. But they're seeing zero plus the add-on as the interim step for 4 or 5 years, which is really good to see. The other one will be where we've got more traditional business. We really just haven't updated their internal workings for a number of years, if not decades. And they're just really saying, we need to pivot this business and we really need to start adopting the new tech. The main benefit they see from all of this, actually, is the data. So the workings can be great. It'll be sold on the basis you'll get a new system, you'll be more efficient. The actual real benefit we see 6 months, 12 months down the line after having these systems is the access to data in terms of these are types of products that are selling. This is the key times you sell product. This is how it affects your financial position as a business. That whole encompassing visibility really is what we're seeing. See, that's the light bulb moment for businesses. Even though they might not be signing up for that, they might be signing up just to be more efficient internally. That's the bit where they say, well, actually, now we've got this information, we can do a lot more, make a lot more informed decisions. So that's been really good from our perspective to see that further down the line.
Yeah, a lot of firms I talk to have qualified in their minds that they see potential in this, and they kind of see that once they've completed the process of integrating like good systems in their practice for compliance, they then think about what's next. And advisory is obviously the first step to thinking about, all right, where can I advise clients best? What they then start to find is they struggle to dig out those gems in their client base where they can say, right, these clients are actually going to want to pay for app advisory or pay for me to actually give them information on which apps to choose, how to implement them, and which aspects of their business it's going to improve. So what, in your experience, what kind of objections do you find, and how do you kind of get around those, or what advice would you have for accountants to get around those kind of objections?
Yeah, so I think the main thing, the first thing, I'm a big kind of app advisor, obviously sort of the buzz phrase at the moment, and that's probably going to be for some time. And I think some of the value we're starting to see is now not just apps, we've got integrated apps, and that's free flowing data. Good quality data moving between several systems, it can be. But if you break down app advisory, what is it? It's essentially assessing a business's problems and then applying technology to fix those problems or offer different ways of working to solve the issue that they've got. So when we break it down, it's all about talking to businesses and understand what their business problems are, and then understanding if a piece of tech can make the difference in terms of fixing that business problem. The barriers we get, and you'll always get this because we've got a lot of cost-conscious areas, certainly with Brexit and other things coming up, MTD, all of this type of stuff. It is cost, and you have to get the cost out there. There is an investment to do any of this. And in our sales process, within half an hour to an hour of talking to a client, they will have an understanding of what the investment budget would be, and they can assess whether that's good value or not good value. We're not trying to win clients just for the sake of winning clients. We're trying to give a really good service, and to give a really good service, there has to be some cost and investment to that from the business. So I think a lot of firms are worried about giving that number out too early, and then spend a lot of time, which what can be not necessarily great opportunities. So for me, one of the main things is, if you think there's going to be a cost to this, let the client know as soon as possible. It's only fair to both parties. If they value it, they'll carry on. If they don't value it, you can find the next person who does value it. So there will be hidden gems, but if you spend too much time on the non-hidden gems, on the people who are going to drain resource, that's going to be quite a big issue for you. And we see a lot of firms go down this route where they treat all clients equally, and all clients aren't equal. You have to assess who the good clients are, who the opportunity are for you, and who's going to help you grow your firm. And then how do you work with those clients who maybe going to drain the resource? And are they even the right type of client for you longer term?
I feel like you've hit so many nails on the head there. That's a really good summary of kind of the conversations we're having as well. What have you found in your conversations, Matt, with partners?
What, map advisory?
Yeah,
I think there's a general consensus now, certainly in the UK, that compliance is just getting driven down in terms of price and so on. There's all gonna be someone who's going to be wanting to do or can do compliance cheaper. So the firms want to find a real USP in the market that's going to differentiate them from their competitors, right? So now I think accountants have been used to just doing the compliance side for so long, they're kind of jumping on this app advisory bandwagon, which is going on a little bit like, oh crikey, where do I even start? And it's trying to, we try and guide them as best as possible. You know, Xero's got the integrated apps and so on. We're looking at a place with Boot Hub, of course, as well. But it's really interesting trying to get those firms almost baby steps, making those strides in the area. Some firms are kind of head and shoulders, they've been doing it for some time, but it's the firms that have kind of sat back for, you know, a number of years now that need to make those big changes to the business and find those right clients. As you say, Matt, there's no point looking at the whole client base. As you say, not all clients are equal. It's about finding those gems and just kind of maximizing your time to get the most value from those particular clients. How about yourself? What have you found?
Yeah, the firms that I'm talking to right now are interesting in the sense that the ones that are quite proactive and looking to do something in the next 2 to 3 years are actually building plans in place now. The ones that are maybe a bit slower moving or still haven't quite got around to the idea of putting compliance to one side and building systems to get around compliance, those are the firms that I think maybe will struggle or fall behind their competitors in the next 2 to 3 years. Also because the more progressive firms have actually been putting plans in place for the last 12 to 18 months, knowing that, you know, with HMRC bringing in Making Tax Digital and a lot of the software houses basically integrating with one another to create this app stack for compliance, there really is no need to have compliance at the core of your practice, but as something that you have to kind of serve to your clients anyway, and have something that that is part of your service offering. And then it's about building on top of that and saying, what is my firm's USP? So, I mean, Matt, over to you, what kind of USPs are you finding that firms are wanting to carve out for themselves once they've figured out that app advisory is something they want to or need to do?
Yeah, I think whether it's an app advisory niche or a sector niche, I think there's a lot of this sort of looking at verticals, which are sectors in my view, or types of businesses, and trying to ascertain where are you strong internally. I mean, I've got a story about a firm in the Northwest. They told me they were primarily manufacturing based. We did some assessment on their client base, on the quality of the client, and who had some longevity and who had some opportunity. And actually, they found that they had a real retail hotspot in there, which they weren't aware of, and they didn't have any specialisms internally for. So they started to pivot a little bit and said, actually, we're getting really good. So within their own client base, you have actually got some data that would actually indicate to yourself. But again, going through that profiling and understanding which clients are better equals than others, if you like, you can start to really assess what you maybe have some verticals already that you're servicing very well, you get a great return from and enjoy the relationship. Then I think, you know, that's going to be something that they could look at. All firms can do that because they have a client base. The client data in general within the whole profession is pretty poor. And one thing you mentioned about the compliance element, what we do know is that real-time data that's linked from compliance, that's the whole foundation of advisory. Because data, we need that data up to date as much as possible. And another thing I would be saying is also looking at the frequency that firms are offering bookkeeping. So if firms are doing bookkeeping and it's purely quarterly for VAT, that's very hard to offer an advisory because you've only got a chance of doing that 4 times a year at best and you're probably behind. Whereas if you start to adopt monthly or weekly or even daily bookkeeping, as others do, then you've got a real chance of being really proactive about how you're going to help those clients. And not all clients will value that. But it's finding the clients that will value that, which is assessing your own client base, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. So many good points there. It's really, really interesting. So with all these firms now, you know, getting involved in app advisory, especially in our 6, 12, 18 months, where do you see the wider impact on small businesses in the UK?
I actually think it's going to be a huge shift to the economy and in a good way. Because I think what we've got at the moment is we've got a very much a spreadsheet-led economy. There's been small business, they've not been given this innovation of systems or availability. And people might think some of the apps are quite expensive, but in terms of the grand scheme of a business, they're not. If you apply them right and you use them to their max, you will get a lot of efficiency and value out of them. So for me, I think it's going to be great positivity because if people have got more access to their own data, their decision making will be so much more informed, which means we should have much better decisions made by the majority of businesses, which will affect the whole economy. And all this thing about, you know, we've got people who are maybe going dealing with suppliers or customers who are going bust. That's normally because they've got lack of visibility of where they are as a business, and they're making poor decisions because they don't have the data to make the decisions. So hopefully those the general quality of the economy would improve based on better informed decisions, in my opinion.
That's that leads me into our next kind of the white elephant in the room with making tax digital, right? I think, actually, before I give my thoughts, like, what are your thoughts on MTD and kind of why and how did we kind of get to this stage where it's being introduced?
Yeah, so I think that the MTD, obviously, we're on the start of an MTD journey, right? This is the first step in April 19 that we're going to get, and there's going to be more iterations, more ways that HMRC are going to want to see our data and how we're transacting as an economy and as an individual business. And this is all about them collecting taxes more frequently with real-time data. That's the longer-term gain of this. But I think what we do get, going back to the benefits for a small business, if we're going to have a better set of data for all of our businesses, it means that hopefully the economy is going to improve, and people who don't want to run a business properly will start to be removed from the economy, which means we should have a really strong economy. So that's what the hope I bring that we get from MTD. And obviously the transparency and the visibility that HMRC are going to want from us as a business, that's the real driver from HMRC. They want to see what people are doing, and they want to see it real time, and they want to start, you know, collecting money from businesses, whether it be quarterly, monthly, whatever that's going to be longer term. So I'm a real advocate for MTD because I know it's going to be painful, but I actually think the outcome of it will be huge.
Yeah, and this is a point of this is actually a point that I make to a lot of my partners. I think when we get to a point where technology adoption is being driven from the top down, from like as a government-led initiative, you know it's time to start adopting technology, right? Because usually the adoption of innovation and the adoption of technology is more of like a bottom-up approach, where businesses start to innovate and businesses start to do different things to like carve out their niche or be more competitive. But actually what we're seeing now is with MTD, it's a very top-down approach, which means that, yeah, it's about time we get like our act together with small businesses. And especially, as you mentioned, having more clarity on data, it's just essential. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, perfect. So naturally, I think here at Xero, you know, we live, you know, a bit of like a Xero bubble, you could say. We know dual firms have partnered with us for however long amount of time. You deal with firms and all, you know, spectrum on their digital journeys. How are you finding their reaction to MTD? And perhaps more importantly, what does that mean for firms being left behind in this MTD journey?
So I think it's really interesting because I don't get the feeling that there's a majority prepared for MTD. And I feel a lot of the strategies really are hope that, you know, we'll somehow get through it and there'll be some heroes internally. And I think what that's going to mean, and it's really going to be April onwards, right? Because people start filing, there's going to be errors and issues, and it's going to be sort of April up until the end of sort of 2019. I can see this sort of going on for. But my worry for the majority of firms, and it links back to clients, is they're going to have the noisiest clients, and are they necessarily the best clients who are starting to take their time? And those nuggets that they've got, and those, you know, there could be quite a few of those nuggets within their client base. They're getting attracted by somebody else who's offering a better service or a more proactive service. So my worry for the firms is no one's going to lose, like, you know, 100% of their client base on April the 2nd if they're not MTD compliant. But I think it could be a sort of a hidden issue where clients are leaving because they're being offered something by a firm who's more proactive and ready to move. And those firms who haven't made any preparation will be left with those sort of clients who are just going to be resource draining and don't really appreciate any more value of any more service or the real-time data they could get. So I think that's my concern for the firms. But in the majority, I don't see that many firms sort of ready for this. Certainly firms who've got a large number of clients who are not MTD compliant. And obviously, you can make them MTD compliant with a bit of bridging software or something like that, but that's not going to give you the opportunity to deliver more service with up-to-date data. And I think if you've got real aspirations to be app advisors or business advisors or whatever it might be, you really need a real foundation of clients who have got relatively up-to-date data. So, yeah, the concern is they'll get left with dross clients.
Yeah, and that obviously doesn't bode well, as you mentioned, going back to the point about, you know, having a healthy economy with businesses that have good data and that are up to date on, you know, as much as they can on, you know, keeping tabs on their cash flow. It doesn't bode well, does it, though, for firms that are kind of at this stage and still not ready?
No, I think, you know, we see a lot of zero heroes and that type of thing who are in the firms trying to make things happen. But it's really got to be a firm-wide initiative. You know, this sort of zero hero, a couple of zero heroes in the corner trying to make it happen. We see a lot of that, and they've got a very isolated position. And they're not coming from top down, they're not coming from bottom up. They're somewhere in the middle trying to make it happen for all. And they really get sort of lumbered with all the strategy, all the actual conversions, all the client-facing meeting, all the training. Those 40 hours a week soon get swallowed up. So firms have got to take a much more strategic approach in terms of how they're going to adopt, not just about being MTD compliant, but the cloud and then offering the new services further down the line.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I guess kind of just finish off the MTD topic, really, from your view, and what do you see, you know, a post-MTD world looking like for both small businesses and accountants?
It leads back to, I think, the better data, the better informed decisions, the better decision making across the economy. Honestly, I think that's going to be a lot of it. But also as well, I mean, one of the exciting things that has been spoken a lot around about in the accounting profession is when we have this data, we'll be able to benchmark as businesses how we're doing against similar types of businesses, not necessarily competitors, but that will be so exciting. And I think that'll be really exciting to the accounting profession, because when they can go and speak to a client about, you do know that you are slightly lower on your net profit as a business against 10 other businesses of a similar type. I think when that data starts to come alive, that's going to be so interesting for a business advisor to be using to benchmark and drive businesses to be as profitable as they can be, but also if they've got growth aspirations, grow as they would like to. So I think that world will be really interesting.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I think it's really similar as well to the concept of like fintechs creating, because of the amount of data they have, they're able to create their own credit profile on businesses. Like if you look at Chaser, for example, the amount of data that they could collect and actually save small businesses by having ready-made credit profiles of how other businesses that have dealt with them before kind of build up this transaction history and also know like how, you know, who the bad actors are within the economy that actually feed back into small business and actually help them make better decisions. It's the, like the possibilities are endless, I think, for post-MTD work.
I mean, on that base as well, I mean, for us, for example, we use Otago for credit profiling on clients. So our payment terms, we've got standard payment terms that we work with businesses on. But if we go to Otago and that gives us like a red, you know, a high credit risk or something like that, we will change our payment terms to deal with that client and tell the client why. And when it's an evidential conversation that, you know, Experian is showing us this about you as a business, which means we have to change our payment terms. We've had some clients walk away because they're not happy with the payment terms, but ultimately we're at risk working with that business. And that could be lost income, lost revenue, but for work we've done. So that, again, that's an informed decision, which makes a huge amount of difference to a small business. So again, that isn't even MTD. That's just the fact of getting the right systems in place and utilizing them. So yeah, I'm with you on those types of world, but whether it has to be post-MTD, your clients could have that now as a firm.
Yeah, that's true. The tools are there to kind of adopt. Mm. And yeah, I guess just coming to a close, so what does the future look like for Blue Hub? I mean, where are you, you know, where do you see the business going in the next few years, and kind of what are the challenges that you're going to face?
We want to grow, really. We're trying to double up the business over the next few years and really start engaging with firms and some of the small businesses. The real challenge that we've had over the last 3-4 years is we're quite a new type of business. There's been integrators that have knocked around sort of enterprise and large business, but not in the small business. And when you're new to an area and new to ways of working, and to be fair, accountants won't work with many other businesses like us before 2 or 3 years ago, you haven't done a lot of education. So that's why our sales process is so educational. We do a lot of webinars and blogs and downloads and things. And that's because we're trying to educate the SME. It's likely they may only go through this type of process once or twice in a decade or two. So having to educate them on what to do and how this works, because in the big enterprise world, you have multiple implementations of systems going on, whereas in the SME world, it doesn't happen that regularly. So the challenges for us is to keep educating, improve our process and make sure our onboarding and delivery is as slick as possible. So we're constantly reviewing where we fall down during the process to ensure that it's normally a bit of education that's missing or a bit of a client expectation which is missing. So just trying to really streamline that and make sure that's as spot on as possible, really. So it's continuous improvement from our perspective. But yeah, we see great opportunity. And I think the real innovation that we're seeing from the likes of Xero has been fantastic. And that's really starting to drive a lot of the opportunity we have, to be fair.
Yeah, it's a great time to be part of the industry.
Yeah, 100%. Exciting times for sure. And certainly Xero and ourselves look forward to work with you in that time as well. It's going to be pretty special, I think. So I think what a great way to finish. Have you got anything more to add to
him? Yeah, I mean, if anybody wants to look you up, Matt, how can they find you? How can our listeners find you?
Pretty much on I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter. They're the strongest. So Matt Flanagan or Matt Flan BH at Twitter, Matt Flanagan and LinkedIn. And we've got bluehub.co.uk. If you're looking for anything in that space.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time out. It was some really, really good insights. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Incredible. Yeah. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for the invite.
Cool. So there you have it. Thanks again for Matt from Blue Hub for joining us. I think you all agree it was a super insightful chat. Hope you got lots out of it. So that's about it for this podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Shaheen, where can these lovely guys reach you at?
So if you haven't already noticed, I love Twitter. So at Shaheen Budrani for professional requests, LinkedIn, S Budrani. But yeah, prefer Twitter these days.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. So at Shaheen Budrani. And what about you?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so I'm Matt Lucas Tweets on Twitter. On LinkedIn, I think it's just Matt Lucas 93. But yeah, likewise, LinkedIn, super professional. Prefer Twitter, much more laid back. Anyway, thanks, guys. You'll hear from us on the next podcast next month.